This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. Wait. The Federal Reserve is doing what? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thursday, today, the 2nd of June. Good as always to have you along, everybody. This is going to make us sound, well, kind of nerdy, but you know what we do for fun around here? We spend a lot of time picking over the details of what the Federal Reserve is doing and what that's going to mean for this economy. It's interest rates that get most of the attention, of course, but the Fed's going to start running off its balance sheet, too. And we've talked about this a little bit, that since the financial crisis, and especially since the beginning of the pandemic, the Fed has bought trillions of dollars in securities, bills and notes and bonds issued by the U.S. Treasury mostly, but also mortgage-backed securities. And this week, the Fed is going to start the long, slow process of getting rid of them. So we asked Marketplace's Justin Ho to explain why the heck the Fed owns mortgage-backed securities to begin with and what it hopes it's going to happen when it gets rid of them.
The reason why the Federal Reserve owns mortgage-backed securities goes back to the golden days of the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009, when the Fed was trying to prevent the market for mortgages from collapsing.
During the crisis, every financial institution in the world had some exposure to the U.S. housing system.
That's Jim Vogel at FHN Financial. He says those institutions had no interest in buying more housing bonds.
And without that supply of capital, the Fed stepped in as a buyer, in effect, of last resort.
The Fed ended up buying over $1 trillion worth of mortgage bonds, in the process pumping over $1 trillion into the economy, and kept buying them for several years, says Winnie Caesar at CreditSights.
In the, call it 2009 to 2014 period, for the most part, the Fed was still adding holdings to its balance sheet, both treasuries and mortgage-backed securities.
In 2017, the Fed started letting some of its mortgage bonds expire, but then the pandemic happened. So the Fed went back to buying mortgage bonds. Caesar says the goal, again, was to get more cash into the economy.
Make sure that borrowers were able to borrow, that property valuations were still going to be relatively stable to avoid a great financial crisis 2.0.
Now the Fed's back to letting its existing bonds expire, so it gradually owns fewer and fewer of them. Megan Green is chief economist at the Kroll Institute. If the Fed isn't buying more mortgage bonds, she says,
then you're going to need a private sector actor to step in if you want to maintain all these mortgages out there.
When private investors buy those mortgage bonds, that pulls cash out of the overall economy.
Then there's less capital generally sloshing around the system. Then that should slow down demand.
And that, in theory, should take some of the upward pressure off of inflation. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, oh look, everything's fine. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Mm-hmm. I personally am a big fan of quick and efficient meetings, but OPEC Plus might have gotten a little carried away today. 11 minutes is what it took for the oil cartel to decide to increase global production later this summer. Increase a little bit, it should be said. So we got Abhi Rajendran on the phone for some explanation and analysis. He's the director of oil market research at Energy Intelligence. Abhi, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of this announcement today from OPEC?
Yeah, it was an interesting announcement. It was, a little bit of a carrot for everyone, right? I think there were a lot of winners on the face of it coming out of this. I'll get to, how much it's really going to matter in terms of affecting oil prices in a sec. But I'll tell you what.
Let's get to the winners in a minute. Let's get to right away what it's going to do to oil prices.
The reality is not much. The group was already adding about 430,000 barrels per day each month.
Yeah.
In incremental supply. So they just accelerated the supply addition slightly, right? Instead of 430, they're going to do 650,000 barrels a day, for July and for August, effectively bring forward the end of the supply tapering by a month. But that incremental supply, again, there's questions around, who's going to actually be able to add it. And I think the answer is just a few countries, a few members. And the impact on oil markets is going to be, fairly minimal.
Right.
And we're still headed for kind of a hot summer here, weather-wise and price-wise.
So let me ask you then the winners, right? And let me tick off a couple and you can say winner or loser, right? Saudi Arabia, they now have clearance to pump some more oil. Winner or loser?
Winner.
Okay. Russia, which is under sanction, its supply, the amount that it's pumping is decreasing. Winner or loser?
I would say they're a winner too, mainly because, there was some chatter about, possible exemption for Russia. Not that would matter much either, but, Moscow didn't ask for that. That was not really talked about. OPEC Plus has generally, been supportive of Russia over the last couple of months as their supply has gotten more and more strained. But even, with kind of the slightly accelerated production, Russia will remain a core OPEC Plus member. That is my expectation for even beyond the fall and the end of the year, that they will remain a core member. So they're a winner, too, I think.
Interesting. That's really interesting. Okay. Now I'm going to get to the geopolitics of it. The United States of America and President Joe Biden, winner or loser?
A winner. But, I would say a winner because it, they got a little bit more oil out of OPEC Plus. But, in terms of actually affecting prices, it's not going to really change the trajectory. So in that sense, I would say, a loser from a market impact standpoint.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go back to market impact. The American consumer, the oil consumer in the United States, that is, seems to me to be the loser because it's not going to have that much near term impact on prices at the pump.
That's right. I think the key driver that driving oil markets is what's going on in the refined product markets, right? The gasolines, the diesels, and then some of the other products, where there are shortages. During the COVID era, we lost 3.5 million barrels a day of global refining capacity, and that's really hitting the consumer and hitting the market. And we expect this to continue over the summer, as driving season picks up, as air conditioning season picks up in the Middle East. That's not talked about much, really around the world, construction season picking up, plus China coming out of COVID. There's a lot of, factors that will push prices or at least keep them fairly high. The refiners will continue to sort of chase that market. And in doing so, they'll continue to buy as much crude as they can, which will keep the oil prices, kind of elevated, at least for, the next couple of months.
Abhi Rajendran, he's at Columbia, also at Energy Intelligence. Abhi, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
It's been hot in a lot of the country this week, real hot, which might not be too big of a problem if you've got air conditioning. But a lot of schools don't. And when it's hot, it's tougher to sit still and listen or do well on tests or teach, otherwise known as what you do at school. Public schools have gotten $189 billion in federal COVID relief funds the past couple of years, and one approved use of that money is improving air quality. So some schools are using it to upgrade the AC. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more on that one.
At Claremont Elementary School in Austining, New York, fourth grade teacher Stephanie Eltabelli says when it gets really warm, a lot of kids just don't come to school. And those who do,
they're sweating, and we do as much as we can to get them drinks of water and times of rest. We keep the lights off, whatever we can. But just 24 bodies in one space brings a lot of heat.
Altabelli School was built in 1955 and has never had air conditioning. Ray Sanchez is superintendent for the district.
I think a lot of our buildings were built for different times. And that's not unique to Austining. We see that across the country.
The average public school in the U.S. is 44 years old, according to the National Center for Education Statistics. And about a third of schools report having a fair or poor heating, cooling, or ventilation system, which might mean no cooling at all. And we all perform better at certain temperatures.
The Goldilocks zone seems to be somewhere in the mid-60s.
Ji-Sung Park at UCLA is the author of several studies that look at how heat affects students. He found the more hot days students experience in a year, the less they learn overall.
It's a slow, hidden burn, if you will. You know, these little disruptions to learning, maybe we don't notice them on a day-to-day basis, but over time they appear to add up.
Some schools, including those in Austining, New York, are planning to put millions of their federal COVID relief dollars towards renovating their heating and cooling systems. Joshua Goodman is a professor of economics and education at Boston University.
It's this funny thing where those improvements may actually improve student outcomes for multiple reasons beyond just pandemic-related issues.
Goodman says more comfortable students will become a more highly educated workforce, which is a big contributor to economic growth. In New York, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Never been late in my whole career.
Me neither. It's totally true. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 435 today, 1.3%, finished at 33,248. The NASDAQ picked up 322 points. Man, I say it every day. You'd think I'd get it right. 2.7%, 12,316. The S&P 500 found 75 points in the couch cushions, about 1.8%, 41.76. NASDAQ, come on. The Microsoft has cut its estimate of sales and earnings for the quarter that ends this month. The company blamed the strong dollar, interesting, making its products and services more expensive outside the United States. Shares, however, still managed to add about 0.8%. Bond prices rose. The yield goes down when that happens. The 10-year Treasury note down just a bit, 2.90%. I don't know what's going on today. You're listening to Market Play.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We talked about oil up at the top of the program, the news that OPEC and its plus members are going to start putting more product on the market in the hopes, and one stresses hopes here, that could bring crude prices down just a little bit. But oil and gas and their associated distillates aren't the only fossil fuels in tight supply. Coal prices in central Appalachia have already climbed by almost half so far this year, more than doubled over the past 12 months. So a lot of coal mining companies are telling would-be customers that even if they wanted to sell them more coal at these high prices, they just don't have any ready to go. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more on everything that this coal spike implies.
Coal is priced according to when you want it. There are contracts with terms in years and months, and then there's the spot market, when you need the fuel immediately. And with coal right now, that's if you can even get it. Last fall, U.S. coal stockpiles hit their lowest level since the 1970s.
Any power plant that's relying on spot market coal right now is quite worried.
Akshay Jha at Carnegie Mellon University says many plants switch to natural gas when coal prices spike, but natural gas prices are at record highs too. And for those who still only use coal,
they may have to shut down just because coal simply isn't available on the spot market.
Many mines have been shut down because of a desire to transition away from dirty fuels. Ian Lang teaches energy economics at the Colorado School of Mines. He says if he were running a coal mine, he'd ask one thing of his customers.
Show me, you know, give me a commitment.
A long-term commitment. Coal mines are tough and expensive to get started. He says mining companies want 8-10-year contracts to entice them to ramp up.
Give me something that I can then, you know, go to my shareholders, go to my investors with and say, look, here's this demand this far out. We need new assets. We've got sales that far out.
But he says most investors aren't interested. The long-term prospects for coal remain weak, even though some suppliers are reaping short-term benefits. Greg Nemeth at the University of Wisconsin-Madison says fossil fuel price spikes could well accelerate the transition away from fossil fuels in favor of wind and solar.
They completely remove the price volatility, which has become such a whiplash effect with oil, with natural gas, and even now with coal. And so there's even more incentive to move to renewables because they remove that price volatility issue.
He says not only price, but the geopolitical challenges facing energy supply right now have many countries looking for any alternative to the status quo. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Plus years into this pandemic, medical offices and hospitals are still hurting for staff, maybe hurting even more now than they were earlier. And it's not just nurses. Anybody who would be working at a bedside is hard to come by. The reasons why we've talked about a lot, but whatever the cause, hospitals still need people. So some of those hospitals are training truck drivers and cafeteria workers and custodians for clinical jobs. From WPLN in Nashville, Blake Farmer. How's that one?
Medical assistants answer phones, take vital signs, and even call in prescriptions. Seems basic, but it requires some specialized training. 12 weeks in this case.
Okay, we're going to talk about drugs. Controlled substances.
Professor Eli Alvarado at Nashville State Community College walks her pupils through their role in helping doctors write prescriptions and the risks that go along with high-powered narcotics, for instance.
Prescription pads. You need to keep them locked up, double locked.
All 11 of these students already work at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, which has nearly 29,000 employees. Some of them are pretty far from the bedside. 52-year-old Clifford Johnson was the lead driver for a team that shuttles surgical instruments back and forth to get sterilized.
When I was driving a truck, I just dealt with driving the truck, come back, driving the truck. And I felt like I could do more in this particular field.
Johnson says he knew there was more opportunity on the clinical side of campus, but going back to school was tricky, even though Vanderbilt has always offered to reimburse tuition.
A lot of times you have to go to work, then leave work, go to school, then you got family. You need 28 hours in a day instead of 24 and without any sleep.
But now Vanderbilt, like so many hospitals, is looking for creative hiring solutions, with more than 100 openings just for medical assistants and more leaving all the time. So beyond covering tuition, the hospital offered to pay employees like Johnson their salaries as they trained full-time. Peggy Valentine directs the education program for what's known as allied health positions.
The turnover rate has been tremendous. And so the thinking was, why don't we work with our employees, build a sense of loyalty, and then we've got a workforce that's likely to stay with us in the long haul.
This grow-your-own concept is catching on around the country as the market for medical assistance becomes more competitive. From a community hospital in Comanche County, Oklahoma, to community health centers across California. David Girard is a strategist who advises health systems nationwide. Their number one challenge at the moment is staffing up and down the ranks.
I think they're learning the value of loyalty and that what it takes to earn it.
And Girard says it's not just money, though that helps. While paid training is attractive, Vanderbilt is also upping hourly rates for medical assistants from $17 to nearly $21 an hour. But it's also about opportunity. Vanderbilt's Peggy Valentine says the credentials are stackable, meaning a medical assistant has an easier time becoming a surgical tech or a registered nurse, jobs that are also in high demand.
Some people may be satisfied being a medical assistant. Others may want to go higher. So it gives you a chance to sort of put your toes in the water and see if this is really for you.
As for Clifford Johnson, he says the new job won't result in a raise, but there will be considerably more opportunity to advance.
To me, this is really like the ground level of where I can go.
And for now, he sees that future with the hospital that's investing in his career. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
For decades now, the reality has been that overall, Americans don't save enough for retirement. About half of older Americans, the research shows, have less than $50,000 saved or invested to retire on. And for many, especially those with lower incomes, the plan is to just keep working. The catch, of course, is that whether you're allowed to keep working isn't always up to you. Marketplace's Rima Kreis, the host of our podcast, This Is Uncomfortable, has this story about what happens when your family becomes your retirement plan.
For years, Rebecca Donagelis worked as an executive housekeeper in Boston, cleaning hotels. And even though making ends meet was tough, she was content.
I love my job. I love my job. I've never been absent, never been late in my whole career.
Wow.
I never took a sick day. No.
Why not?
Well, if you don't take your sick days, you get paid 3 days' pay. Gosh, you make it however you can. You make it however you can.
She was a single mom raising two kids. Her youngest son, Jean-Pierre Regis, remembers just how hard she'd work.
All of her money basically went to, feeding us, paying her rent, and making sure that we got a pretty solid education at the elementary level.
And it was important to her that her son, Jean-Pierre, also go to a good college. So when he got into a private liberal arts university in New York, Rebecca insisted on paying for half of the tuition. And to do that,
I took out my 401k plan.
She liquidated about $20,000 from her retirement plan. At the time, it seemed like a no-brainer. She had no plans to ever stop working. But years after Jean-Pierre graduated, just as he was climbing the professional ladder, everything changed. He got a voicemail from his mom.
My mom just says, I just got fired.
I just got fired.
Call me.
Call me.
Bye.
End of message.
It came as a total shock. She'd worked there for about a decade, and since she lived in the same building as the hotel, she didn't have to pay rent. The hotel gave her 2 weeks' pay and told her she needed to leave her apartment within a year. At 75 years old, Rebecca didn't know what to do. Starting over felt impossible. She had just $600 in her bank account.
I missed a whole lifetime. I missed lifetimes on the job of things that other people were doing. And I just screwed myself in the end.
Her son, Jean-Pierre, was her only real support system. So So one day he came to her with an offer. Why not move in with him? She'd live with him and his boyfriend in a small New York City apartment. This was her best option. So that's what they did. Jean-Pierre remembers the day she moved in.
It was a beautiful day outside, and we were on the terrace, and we were like, welcome home, roommate.
Rebecca was grateful, but at the same time, it was hard. She'd gone from only depending on herself to now depending on someone else. It seems like there was a bit of like reversal of roles happening.
Oh, he became my mummy, essentially.
They're still working through the transition. Her bedroom, for example, has no windows and is much smaller than she's used to.
The line I remember most often was, I moved from a 750 square foot
781 square foot, remember?
to a 10 by 12 room.
Yeah.
Without roommates, Jean-Pierre is now paying $4,000 a month on rent. Rebecca says she's going to start chipping in from her Social Security checks. But for Jean-Pierre, the hardest part has never been about the money. He just wants to feel like his mom is okay.
I mean, frankly, the hardest thing is, I think, feeling emotionally tied to your happiness, right?
Well, lay your fears on that. I am happy.
Yeah.
Know that these words. I am happy, Jean-Pierre. Don't fret about it.
It's not exactly the ideal picture of retirement. But the reality is that one out of every four Americans doesn't have a retirement plan. And so people are increasingly having to figure out different solutions. As far as Jean-Pierre and Rebecca can see, their new living arrangement is permanent. They've merged two very different lives at very different stages. They say it's become a reminder that their most important investment has always been in each other. I'm Rima Khreis for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, about which, honestly, I cannot even with this. Saw this on Catherine Rampell's Twitter feed last night. She's going to be with us tomorrow, by the way, to discuss the week that was. But last night on her Twitter, this item, a poll from Morning Consult of registered voters on this question. Who has a lot of control over inflation? That's their word, a lot. The most common answer across party lines, the president. Wrong answer. Among Republicans, 55% say the president, which means we need more GOP listeners to this program, I think. Among Democrats, large corporations was the most common answer for having a lot of control over inflation. Also, not right. So I guess we need more Democratic listeners, too. The actual right answer, which overall about a third of registered voters got, the Fed. Hello. All right, we're going. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. CNN had this story today that the White House is going to start paying its interns. In other news, the White House hasn't been paying its interns? Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Petra, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. For the record, we pay our interns. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.